Hi, everybody. My name's Sandy Hickox, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm scared to death, too. I'm going to tell you, sitting on this front row, I don't know if y'all realize it or not, there's some really important people here. And when I saw Gay come in, I said, oh, my God. You know, and then Michael and Pat, thank you for asking me. These people have been in the assembly ever since I've been going. You know, and it's just, it's neat to see them here. It's neat to know that they're doing this AA deal for us, for me, for it to be here, be Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful for that. Thank you. Oh gosh, I am so scared. I was sitting in the front yesterday, and Bill was sitting beside me, and I said, well, thank you, you know, for asking me and stuff. He said, I didn't vote for you. And then this morning, he leaned over and he told me, he said, don't screw it up. I'm going, oh, God, this is just what I need, you know. Oh. I have made some wonderful friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's good to see them. You know, it really is. And I'll settle down in a minute, I think. I hope. Talking about the tape thing, it scares me when people say, oh, I heard a tape on you, because, you know, I've made good talks and I've made some crappy talks, you know, and I'm not sure which one they heard. You know, and it scares me, you know, because I let God work. I try to, you know, and then my ego takes off and then I have to straighten that out. But it is good for me to be here this morning. Michael knows my sponsor, so I have to do good. She'll tell on me. Today I am sponsored, and I'm grateful for that. And the people that tell the women and the men, yes, I appreciate that. Because there was a time in this program I was looking for a sponsor because there's not women sober a long time in my area, and I had a lot of people tell me no. And my sponsor is a long-distance sponsor. She lives in California. And we have made that work for almost 3 years. You know, and that has worked for us. And I'm grateful. She is real busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, which makes me real busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I do what the people I hang with do. And I'm grateful for that. I was born the second of four kids. All of them were boys. So, which is funny, because I saw the corsage, you know, and I asked Wendell, I said, well, when do I wear it? He said, I think you wear it when you talk. I said, oh, okay. Well, so I come down here, and Michael had hers on, and then the Al-Anon lady had hers on, and I'm going, oh, no, I'm supposed to have it on, and don't know I'm supposed to have it on. This woman's stuff I learned here in AA from the women, you know, and I had to ask Mark how to sit up here in this dress and not show y'all all my business. Debbie told me I had to wear a dress. She didn't tell me how to operate in one. Oh, God. Thank y'all for not laughing at me when I come to you with these dumb questions. You know, thank you for showing me to the best of your ability what to do. You know, I appreciate that. Like I said, come up around the boys, and my mother is a real plain, hardworking woman. She don't do the frills and chills and all that kind of stuff. She don't know the latest fashions in the stores or in the home decorating or any of that kind of stuff. She never has. The most important thing for my mother was a roof over the head of her kids and food, you know, and we come up like that. And I always felt, I think I come out this tall, you know. I've always been tall and skinny. And you know, when you're in the third grade, that's not cool. I was always at the end of the line behind Roy Samples, you know, in school, and he was tall and lankier, it seemed like to me, but I remember now that I was always behind him, and they lined you up shortest to the tallest, you know, so I was taller than him. That was terrible. I didn't start putting on weight where women's supposed to have weight until probably I got sober, you know, and I'm real grateful for that today. But I was always insecure. I was always scared. I was always walking around hunched over to try to be the height of everybody else. And, you know, I just had no... Michael talks about low self-worth and self-esteem, and I can identify with that. Because I was always wanting to be inside like y'all looked outside. You know, and in school, I just had a hard time. We moved, not a lot, but enough to make it, you know, to add to it. I remember I had to start school 1 year with my front teeth missing because my brothers knocked them out. You know, and I'm sitting there, everybody thought I was real quiet, you know, because I sit there and I wouldn't say nothing because I didn't have no front teeth. And I mean, this is brand new school. And, oh, God. You know, and I wanted to stay home so bad, and my mama would not let me. She made me go. And just stuff like that that just added to it. And by the time I was 13 and I had my first drink, I was ready. Because when I had my first drink, it made the magic happen. We were at a basketball game, and some of the guys that I was hanging with said, well, let's go outside and drink a beer. And I'd never seen a beer or any of that, never smelled one or any of that. And I went outside and I drank a beer, and the magic happened for me. It made me feel inside like y'all looked outside. And it was wonderful. I just instantly put on weight, you know, in the right spots. You know, my tongue got just a little bit smoother, and I wasn't as dumb and as clunky as I'd always been. I mean, I was interesting for the guys to talk to. And I mean, there was a gang of us out there. But all my life, I've come up around boys. Wherever we moved, there was a big family of guys there and never any girls. So I come up doing that guy thing. I mean, my brothers would always put me in the front in the woods to catch spiders. You know, I just... I can tell y'all don't do a lot of wood stuff here. If you're walking in the woods and nobody's been through there, there's spider webs through everywhere, you know, and whoever's in front catches them. You know, you learn to put your gun in front and let the barrel catch spider webs. You know, after a while you learn that. But I mean, that's the way I come up, and we was always romping and stomping in the woods, and you know, one of the things I used to be so mad at my mother about is she'd let the boys camp out at night and wouldn't let me go with them. And I could go anywhere else, but she wouldn't let me camp out. And I stayed mad about that a long time. But anyway, when I had my first drink, all that changed. I was, oh man, it was wonderful, you know. And I spent the rest of my time pursuing it. The girls in school didn't drink, but then, you know, them boys you're not supposed to hang around with, those were the ones drinking, those were the ones I hung around with. I skipped school more than I went to get with them, to go and just get that feeling, let that magic happen. I started lying to Mama, and she was working, trying to raise us and all that kind of stuff, and when the phone rang, she never knew what I'd done got into. You know, it was always something. I could write her name better than she could, so anytime I, you know, that I was out of school, they'd always call her and check, you know, because I'd been caught doing that. And finally, she just had enough of enough. She said, you can do what you got to do, but you ain't going to do it under my roof anymore. And my mother was not in Al-Anon. And I know today that that was one of the hardest things she ever had to do. And she put me out when I was, this gets a little tricky, she put me out when I was 14, but my license said I was 15 because I yaki-docked with my birth certificate to make me a year older and got another Social Security card and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going to tell you, when you get sober and have to clean that crap up, it gets to be a little tedious. But I did that. With y'all's help, I did that. So now I've only got one Social Security card. I've only got one number. I mean, my name is my name, and I'm on record one time. And I'm grateful for that. But anyway, that made me a supposedly a year older on paper. So I got an apartment. I started waiting tables, and I quit school, you know. And then I met him. He come through the door of the restaurant and had a big old fat wad of $100 bills, and he was my answer because I knew if I just had enough money, I wouldn't feel the way I was feeling inside. It would fix it. Well, I made it my business to make him my business, and that happened. I asked Mama one time how long I lived with him, and she said about 5 years. I don't remember that. He drank a lot, and that allowed me to drink as much as I want to without question. And when he would get to drinking, we would start fighting, and I wouldn't know when to shut up, and it got physical. And I used to blame him a long, long time for him being so mean to me. You know, but when I got in this program and had to start looking at the part I played, I saw that thing a little different. You know, I know a lot of times if he'd told me to shut up, I wouldn't have got hit so much. I know that today. I didn't know that then. It was always him. He'd just get drunk and just beat me. And I used to wear the short sleeve shirts where people could see the bruises for attention. I know that today. I didn't know that was the reason I was doing it then. But I was in a very, very controlled environment with him. I mean, I worked for him in a bar that he owned, and I didn't hang out with a bunch of people because he didn't allow that, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it was real controlled, it was sick. I know today that I wouldn't live in that kind of situation today. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. It's made me much, much better. Not so sicky dependent on people. And I'm grateful for that. I kept, you know, I didn't have guts enough to leave him. I'd pack up all my stuff, you know, in two split seconds and just haul butt. And he'd come find me and, you know, we'd fight all the way home. And sometimes it's hard for me to remember some of those situations because I remember one night, like I said, he worked, you know, he owned the club, and I was like the main waitress. And one night, Saturday night, the busiest night we got, he got drunk, and I was waiting tables, and I got a little flirtatious trying to piss him off, and I did. And I wouldn't shut up when he told me to shut up, and we cleared the place out. We cleared the place out. And, you know, I'm real grateful that I don't have to live like that anymore. I remember he tore my clothes off of me in that facility that night, and everybody just got up and left. Everybody was scared to get involved. And I understand that fear, because this man was crazy when he was drinking, just like I was. I ran away one time and went to New Orleans, Louisiana. Now I'm going to tell you, from a girl out of Manchester, Georgia, to go to New Orleans, Louisiana, it was something to behold. You could buy liquor at the quick store. I mean, in Manchester, we had to go to the place that everybody knew that was selling it, that wasn't supposed to be selling it, and if you knew the right one, you could get you a half pint, you know, because I wasn't old enough to get it at the liquor store, and then you'd have to drive to Greenville, you know. So I was amazed. I was utterly and totally amazed, and it wasn't long, you know, I was hanging with the people doing what I was doing, you know, and I was, waiting tables was the only thing I knew, and it wasn't long that I, you know, that money would not pay my bills and all that kind of stuff, and I started selling myself, plain and simple. That's what I do when I'm drinking. That's where I go, because I'm not employable. I'm not, y'all know how we get. You just know how we get. Like I said, I used to tell everybody that I come home from New Orleans because my mama got real, real sick. And that's crap, okay? I come home from New Orleans because I had run out of people. I had used them all up. I remember, I'd like to go back there sober. I hear it's a real neat town. The only thing, you know, I've got a couple of memories about New Orleans. I remember one time I was sitting on Lake Pontchartrain with everything that I owned in both sacks in the back seat of the car, and I didn't have any gas and I didn't have any money. Now, I know to get from that situation to where I am today, there was a man involved, because that's the way I operated. But I don't remember any of the details of that. You know, they're just not important, I guess. I don't know. I come back home to take care of my sick mother. Not. She told me that I could come back home under the condition that I didn't drink in her house and that I got my GED. I said, okay, I could handle the GED part, but the not drinking I was a little iffy on, you know, because I didn't got used to that. Used to living on my own, and I was really concerned. But I tried it. I think that was my stage of controlled drinking, because I would go to school and she didn't get off work till a certain time, so I'd go and I'd just have just enough to take that edge off to where I could still function, not be too drunk and she know it. And I did that for about, seems like maybe a month, but I doubt seriously it was that long. Because you know how we are. Once we start drinking, we can't stop. I can't stop. Don't want to. You know, what's the point of a beer? You know, good. Never registered with me. But anyway, Mama told me, you know, I got my GED and I stayed there, and I knew a man who knew a man, because that's the way I operated then. And the government was behind the railroad to hire women. And I was one of the first seven women that was hired for the railroad in Manchester, Georgia. And I thought I had just, you know, Big Book talks about I had arrived. Well, Bill shares, you know, that thought, and I can identify with that, because I thought when I got that job on the railroad that I had arrived. Now, by God, I won't have to depend on anybody for my money. I can go and do like I want to, and that is just okay with me. And so I did that. Well, working on the railroad, you stay laid off and cut off about as much as you work. I didn't know that. And at that particular time, I had more money. I was running with a faster crowd, and we got to doing some other stuff. Now, I know today that my other stuff was the way I control my drinking. Because at that particular point in my life, when I would drink, I would black out. You know, and I would come to and I wouldn't know who he was or where I was or what we had done or how long I'd been gone or any of that kind of stuff. You know, and it scared me. So I used a lot of drugs to control my drinking. And I didn't know that at the time. I thought I was, you know, moving up. Oh, God. All my life, my mama told me that I was sorry, just like my daddy. My daddy left her. He was drinking. He hung out in the bars. He chased the women. He loved the sound of the music in those bars. And all my life, mama told me I was just like him. And that's the one thing I didn't want to be, was an alcoholic like my daddy. So, you know, drugs would help me over that. Well, at that particular time, I was making good money, and I was starting to get, you know, refrigerators and washers and dryers and nice clothes and, I mean, a nice car, you know, a couch and a sofa and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going to tell you, started doing that other stuff, and I had $7 going down the road, washing machine on it, going to the dope dealer. How much you give me for this? Load of clothes to my sister-in-law. How much you give me for these? And I mean, I used to pay, you know, some good money for some clothes. I had some nice clothes. And I sold everything I had. Everything I had. Financial, I mean, all that material stuff. And I'd sold my soul a long time ago, you know. I got real strung out, and it was cut off and all that kind of stuff. So I had to go back home to Mama one more time. And I come off that stuff in her back bedroom, and I was like just a caged animal. I was peeping out the windows, and I was paranoid, and I was scared because they were coming to get me. She didn't know what in the world was wrong with me. I mean, she was scared to even come in there. I was just like a nut. I should have been in some kind of institution for sure, tied up. But I was there with my mom, and it about scared her to death. I got off of that, and I said, well, shoot, I found out that I stood for work in Fitzgerald, Georgia. So I, you know, if I just get away from these people, I'm going to be all right. It's these damn people I'm hanging out with. Excuse me, Deb. In case she gets this. So I moved to Fitzgerald. There was a lady that would allow me to stay with her because I didn't have any money. You know, I didn't even have a car. Mama let me borrow $350 to buy a 1964 Chevrolet. And that's what I took to Fitzgerald. And so it was one of my chances that I tried to start over, and it wasn't long. I was back doing what I was doing with the people that do what we do. Well, the crowd that I was hanging out with saved my life because I know that they called the law to me, and I got arrested for possession of dope. And I know today that that is the one thing that has saved me. I used to hate those people for it, but I come to realize that they saved my life, and I am so grateful. I come to one day to a knock on the door down there. I'm, you know, working a little bit, just enough, you know, where I got, you know, money coming in. I'm not doing any hard dope or anything, but I'm drinking every day. I am drinking every day. And this knock come on the door, and I peeped out the windows, and it's a cop's car, and that wasn't no big deal. In the neighborhood I was living in, they were regulars, you know. And I opened the door, and then they kind of shoved me down in a chair. And started going through the house, and it, you know, like the scenes you see on TV, that ain't fake. They do it like that. I mean, they start turning over everything, you know? And I'm sitting there in a little t-shirt and shorts and all that kind of stuff, and they're going through the house, and they're finding all kind of stuff. I mean, just all kind of stuff. Stuff that I was taking to function to work, they thought I had to sell. It shows you the quantities. But anyway, they carried my butt to jail. But to get me to jail and everything, I said, well, I can't go to jail looking like this. All my blue jeans were out on the line. So while they were going through ripping and roaring and snorting and tearing that stuff, I slipped out the back door. And let me tell you, you don't do that. They come around the corner of that trailer, guns drawn, about scared the piss out of me. I ain't kidding you. I'm just trying to get my pants off the line, you know. I just want my pants. I can't go to jail in shorts. So they took me to jail, and I stayed there, and they kept bringing them trays and all that kind of stuff, and I didn't think I'd ever going to get out, because I couldn't call him because she was home, you know, and I didn't know any of these deputies to that I could kind of maneuver, because I didn't have any money, didn't have no cigarettes, I didn't have nothing, you know. I mean, I had been to jail before several times, but there was always somebody there to get me out, and this time I was there. You know, my brain couldn't figure out this plan to get me out. So finally, one of the deputies called him and told him the deal, and he come up and made my bond. And I'm going to tell you, the first place I went after I got out of jail was to the bar to see if I was missed, because I'd been locked up about a week, you know, and nobody missed me. I was amazed. God, I was so sick. They put me in a pink room and told me they painted it special for me, and I believed them. And y'all asked me to come here and speak. Well, I'm out on bond. I'm fixing to lose my job, which is my identity. I mean, it totally is. You asked me who I was, and I said, well, I got a job on the railroad. You know, and I got this lawyer, this hotshot lawyer, so I won't have to do any time, maybe. And I had a guy come talk to me. And this guy had been off somewhere. He'd been gone probably about 45 days, something like that. And he come back, and he was talking in tongues. I ain't kidding. He was talking crap I never heard. We used to drink and do stuff together, and he wasn't doing any of it. And he was talking about God, program of recovery, and just Greek. I didn't know what in the world he was talking about. He said, but let me tell you what I heard. He said, if you go down here, it'll save your job. You'll get your job back. Oh, okay. Well, sign me up. Where do I go? I'd never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, never heard of treatment, none of that stuff. And I went to Willing Way. That's where I went. Stayed down there. That's where I know CD and his wife, Ida. They done the family counseling for me and my mother down there. And I stayed down there, and I did that deal. And every time I'd see Dot here, she'd come, you got honest yet? It pissed me off. Of course I ain't got honest, but, I wasn't going to tell her. I'm here to get my job back. One of the ladies in that place told me the one thing that I heard. Now, there was a lot of good things said and all that, but this is what I heard. You never have to feel the way you're feeling inside unless you want to. There's a way out. And I'm going to tell you, I had been feeling like crap inside a long, long time. And I heard that. I was ready, I guess. And I believed them, so I started doing what they asked me to do. I wanted to get the job back, and I didn't want to feel like I was feeling anymore. So I done the deal in treatment, went to the halfway house, all that kind of stuff, because they told me I wasn't ready to go home yet. Some of us are sicker than others. And in the halfway house, I hung out with some women, and God, I'd never done that before, and they made me wear all my clothes wherever we went. They just wouldn't let me dress like I used to dress, and I didn't understand that. It was all Greek to me. I found out there at my first attempt at even looking at any part I played in anything that the reason, me not having a father was not the reason I drank. And I blamed it on him a long time. Well, I did the deal there, and then I come home and I was scared to death. What am I going to do when my friends come knocking on the door asking me to go drink a beer? What am I going to do when they come wanting this or that? How am I going to tell them no? Well, I'm here to tell you today, standing before you, they ain't come knocked on my door yet. God does for me what I can't do for myself. I was scared. I didn't know whether I was going to be strong enough to do this deal. But I then started getting a little bit of self-esteem back and self-worth back. I had wrote him a letter and told him that, I'm going to do this AA deal, and that means no messing with married men. And when I got home, he come up to the house, and he was real angry and all that kind of stuff, and told me he was going to plant some dope around and all that kind of stuff. So I called my probation officer, and I told him. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. I went to court. I got about a 30-day chip in my pocket, and the lawyer says, you want to go get this thing over with? And I said, no, not really, but okay. And for once in my life, I was willing to take the responsibility of my action, and whether or not I liked the results had nothing to do with it. I didn't want to go to jail, but I was willing. Because I had broke the law. So lawyer told me to wear a dress. Okay, I got one skirt in my closet, right? And it's one of these things that it zips funny. So I called my sponsor of the day, and I said, and she wasn't home. So I talked to her husband about how to dress. And he said, just put that zipper in the front. I said, okay. So I put the zipper in the front, and here I go to court with that dress. Now, to this day, I don't know which way that zipper goes. But I put it where he told me to put it. I was willing to do what he told me to do. And here I go to court. And I'm up there, and I'm shaking almost as bad as I was a while ago. And I'm up there, and I'm just pale as a sheet. And they talked a lot of Greek I didn't understand, but when it was over, I didn't have to go to jail. I took the first offender's probation, and it was a big fine to me. I looked back on the papers not too long ago, and it wasn't that big a fine, not as I see things today. And I started coming to y'all. I got involved with a local group, and I got hooked up with a couple of guys that had just got a hold of some Joe and Charlie Big Book tapes, and I'm going to tell you, they were on fire. And they were pissing everybody in that meeting off. Because a lot of stuff they heard in that meeting wasn't in that book. And there was this old SOB in the back of the room, and I'd get up my talk, and I'd say, my name's Sandy, and I'm alcoholic and a. Yeah, and I got hemorrhoids, too. What in the hell has that got to do with anything? He's old senile farts, what he is, and I'd cuss him all the way home. That son of a bitch ain't keeping me out of my meeting, by God. I don't care how his hemorrhoids are. So I'd pray all the way to the meeting the next day. God, give me tolerance for that old man, and just let me be patient and not cuss him out. Because at that particular time, I was quick. And I'd get up there and I'd go to Sharon again and I'd go, "My name's Sandy and I'm an alcoholic and a..." "Yeah, and I got hemorrhoids too." "Son of a bitch." You know? And one of the guys lovingly pulled me aside. He said, "Sandy," he said, I said, what's the deal with him and these hemorrhoids? You know, I don't understand it. We don't want to hear about that." He said, "That's just it." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "Anytime you're up there and you're identifying yourself as an alcoholic and anything else, you're saying that you're different from us. And honey, if you're different, this is not going to work for you. It's when we get the same, when we become like each other, it's that identification that makes this thing work as an alcoholic. If you take care of your alcoholism, all that other stuff will be taken care of also." I said, "Oh, okay." So the next meeting I got up there, "My name's Sandy and I'm an alcoholic. And you know that cured up his hemorrhoids?" Sure it is. Now, I have cussed that man more in these rooms than you will ever know, but I'm going to tell you what. When I get in a rough time, I go to these old farts that piss me off and I say, "What in the world do I do? Tell me how to work this program to in this situation." Because I'm going to tell you, I got here and I got about, got in here and got to be Miss AA and got married and all that kind of stuff, and we were going and doing and all that kind of stuff, and then we got divorced. And I'm going to tell you, it was a tough time for me. Because I know today in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can grow together, you can grow apart. And we had different ideas. And I was going to one meeting a week because, you see, I was in this big book and they wasn't. And by God, they wasn't doing it right. So you need to come over here and be like us. You know, sit up high. When I fell, it hurt. I found out that I was very self-righteous. I found out that I was very judgmental of some other people. And I'm going to tell you, I damn near got drunk. I was just as crazy 5 years sober as I had ever been in my drinking. And it was these old timers, these people with this that makes you mad in the meetings that saved my butt. I asked this old fart to be my sponsor and he said he would. Now I am a glutton for punishment, but I'm going to tell you, I was hurting so bad I was willing to do anything. And this man saved my life. Well, me being willing to do what he asked me to do. And he said his head was in the right place and it wasn't in my pants, and we just worked it out just fine. And I want to tell y'all, I'm thankful for that. And I'm thankful for the guys in here that have their head in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and that can work with girls. I appreciate that. And he did that. But there come a time when that quit working. I became unwilling to do what he asked me to do, you know, and I just got real sick again about 10 years sober. And I had asked some women with what I thought was long-term sobriety to sponsor me, because everything that would have had to do with me would have been long distance, because I live in a little old bitty town about this big, you know. And they told me no. Over and over and over, I was told no. Well, I kept praying, "God, show me what in the hell to do. I'm going nuts here," you know. And I got a tape in the mail, and this lady on this tape said that there was a time in her life where she had to get into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or get out. And she knew it. And I knew I was at that point. So I found out who, the name of, and this lady gave her last name on that tape. And I'm real grateful for that, because it'd be hard to find Debbie H. in Los Angeles. You know, so I say my last name. So if you ever come through Fitzgerald and you're looking for me, you can find me in the phone directory. And my name is listed. My men's took care of it. I'm not hiding from anybody today. Debbie, I called Debbie. It took me about 2 days to get a hold to her, because she is a very active woman in this program, and I am very grateful for that. And she said that she would sponsor me. And we've been doing that deal. I got to tell y'all a couple of things that's real important to me. When I first got in this program, my oldest brother had come to New Orleans, Louisiana, found me selling myself and disowned me right there on the spot. The process of the amends, and all my life I'd worshiped the ground he'd walked on. I'd shined his shoes, ironed his pants. I mean, I just wanted, you know, like a little dog, just pat me on the head and I'll go away. This program freed me from that sick need that I had on him. When I went and made my amends to him, I told him, I said, "Ed, I love you with all my heart, but I will not do the things I had to do for you anymore. I know that I want to be a part of your life. I really do. But if you don't want that, that's okay with me." And I walked away there free. This old man that I lived with that used to beat me so bad and all that kind of stuff, when I found out that I played a part in that, I was able to go to him. I was scared though because, you know, he told me, the last time I talked to him, he told me, if I ever see you again, I'm gonna kill you. And I believed him. So when I called to set up an appointment to make my amend to him, I made sure we was in a public place because if he was gonna kill me, by God, there was gonna be some witnesses. So I went to him and I made my amends to him and I walked away there free. Because I'm going to tell you, before that time, when I'd see him come down the road, I'd duck and I'd dodge and I'd hide. He wasn't going to see me because he was going to kill me. Y'all have given me that. When I got married the first time in this program, my oldest brother walked me down the aisle and gave me away. And we don't go from where I was at in that relationship to that. How do you get there? 12 steps. 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was out there drinking and doing them drugs, I didn't get married much, but when I got in this program, I seemed to develop a habit of it. And I, you know, sometimes I can laugh at that, and sometimes it makes me want to cry. I got to working with this guy on my job. Oh, I got to tell you about my job. You ain't going to believe it. Working on the railroad, they offered to pay off. I took it because I was married trying to do that home thing. And with that money, I went to school. I didn't go to college or nothing, but I went to the VOTEC and I learned how to do something legit, okay? I took me a little in accounting course, and they send you out on interviews and all that kind of stuff. And when I went to the interview for this, I mean, it was a really good job. I mean, it was in the town where I was at. I mean, it was a really good job. Had on the bottom, he says, "Have you ever been convicted?" And I'm wanting to lie and say no. Because this is a good job. And I know if I tell these people what I've done, they're not going to let me have it. So I took the application home with me and I went by my sponsor's house and I said, "Well, what do I do here?" He said, "Sandy," he said, "you're either going to let God do this deal or you're going to do this deal." He said, "You're either going to be honest or just keep lying and hiding and sneaking. And when they find out, you're going to lose it anyway." He said, "Go up there and tell the man what your situation is." I was 1 month coming off probation. 1 month coming off. If they'd waited a month to check me, then they wouldn't have found nothing. Well, I went in there, and lo and behold, he said, "Just leave it blank." So I walked out there. I said, "Well," I said, "I blowed that job." Forget that, because, I mean, I was straight up with him. I told him the whole deal. And I had been there 11 years on that job. I've got an office with my name on the door. I don't know about y'all, but that impresses the hell out of me. To go from where I went to that? Are you kidding? Oh, my God. Sometimes I get real cranky thinking they just don't know who they got behind them doors either. And my sponsor has to set me straight. Sponsorship is one of the most important things for me today. I have tried to work with a lot of women, and nope. And like my sponsor, when I asked Debbie to be my sponsor that day, she said, "There's some things that you're going to have to do if we're going to work together, because I am real busy. I take sponsorship very seriously. I schedule particular times for you. You wear a dress to your home group meeting. You sit up front. You don't talk while other people are talking." I'm going, "Oh, my God, how am I going to do that?" "And you wear a dress." I said, "A what?" She said, "A dress to your home group meeting one time a week." Now, I think I got one black dress, you know, that we all got. And it was probably like that guy's coat. You know, it was a couple of years old. But I was willing. So I started going to the secondhand stores looking for me dresses. And I started listening to people, showing respect for other people. And I started changing. And I've had people in the grocery store. You know, I had to tap them on the shoulder and say, "Hey, I'm so-and-so." And they're, "Sandy, is that you?" "Oh, yeah." "Well, Lord have mercy, I didn't even recognize you." That is a program of Alcoholics Anonymous working in my life through sponsorship. I've got a baby of my own today. She's about 6 months sober. Almost six. And I'm going to tell you, this girl has been wonderful in my life because she's willing to do the deal. And I have seen her walk through some situations that are just unbelievable. You know, and she just thinks I am just wonderful. You know, and I try to tell her that it is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I know I think my sponsor is wonderful too, so I can identify with that. If you don't sponsor people, you're really missing out on something else. Because I'm going to tell you, no matter what I got going on, no matter how tragic it is, my husband was out without work for a period of time. And I'm going to tell you, you know, when you go without the main breadwinner coming in the family, you know, the material things start to go. Like that fancy car we had. Bank had to come get it. We couldn't make the payments on it. But let me tell you what AA has done for me. It has helped me to say, okay, when they come got it, they say, you owe this much money, and we paid them back every month that much money. You know, we did that. That's the adult thing. And there is no shame in that. Y'all have taught me that. The shame is in not making those payments, skipping and dodging and ducking. And today that's not it. Me and my husband have worked a lot here lately. Seems like we have date night on Wednesday night, if that tells you anything. You know, we're just zipping and zooming and all that kind of stuff, and it has just been something to see. I have, before I even come up here, I've had two more girls come to me and ask me to be their sponsor. Now, we hadn't had this face-to-face chat, and they may not be willing to do the deal. And I am ridiculed a lot in our meetings because I have requirements. There has requirements of me. AA has requirements in the big book, and I'm not ashamed of that. Because I see the changes in me when I've done what I've been asked to do. And I am so grateful for that, because y'all have given me life. I want to tell you thank you for standing up for AA. That has saved my life. And I want to tell y'all thank y'all for letting me share.